On this episode of the Fieldhouse Files, it's time for a mid-season report. Former Pacer Eddie Gill joins me to break down the first 41 games. And welcome into the Fieldhouse Files, the podcast where I take you behind the scenes with the Pacers, talk to individuals on and around the team, and tell you what you need to know. Well, right now at the midpoint, Pacers are 23-18, 6th in the Eastern Conference, and I think the over-under before the season was 24.5, basically saying that they would have 25 wins like last season, and here halfway through, they're basically already there. And so now I bring in Eddie Gill, who's been an analyst for Pacer radio and TV broadcasts for a half dozen years and obviously played for the team, so he provides that great player's perspective as well. And to start, Eddie, I got to believe you were like the rest of us that didn't see this coming at all.
Yeah, just were uncertain as to what you might see coming into this season. Obviously, underwhelming results last season. There was obviously a shift in terms of the roster. Obviously, definitely a youth movement per se, mixed in with a couple of veterans. So you weren't really sure as to what level of success this team could attain. And now that we're halfway into the season, the expectations externally, I would say for sure, have definitely changed as this team is currently in the playoff mix.
Before we get further into that, I should ask you about the TV aspect. You've been doing this now for quite a while. Take me through kind of what that's been like for you. How much are you enjoying that, whether it's some road games, about a dozen with Mark Boyle, and then being in studio with JJ for much of the home games?
Yeah, it's been awesome. I'm in the middle of my seventh year now, and it's hard to believe it's been that long, but I got to really give a lot of credit and really show a lot of gratitude towards the Pacers organization and Jamie Burns specifically to kind of reaching out to me and kind of on a whim to see if I'd be interested. And we talked through it, obviously, and here we are, like I said, in my seventh year, and I've been thoroughly pleased with it. You know, work with a great group of guys, and you referenced Jeremiah Johnson, our pregame and postgame producer, Ken Softman, Brian Woodrum does the in-game stuff. Obviously, Jamie Burns, Christy Mary, Quinn Buckner. You know, I've been really fortunate to have a team of guys to kind of show me the ropes, coming in here, not knowing one single thing about this industry, how to do it. You know, I know the game. I'm confident in that. But being able to execute, these shows and broadcast, and as you referenced, Mark Boyle has been tremendous, on the radio side of things. So, I'm incredibly grateful and really been happy with the opportunity.
And to your guys' credit, a lot of continuity there, not a lot of changeover. Yeah. I mean, CD and QB have been doing it together for now 17 years. And by the way, congrats to Chris for being voted as the Indiana Sportscaster of the Year for surprisingly the first time. But you guys do a great job. And I think Pacer fans, even more so now this season as the team is winning, are consuming a lot of your content on a gamely basis.
Yeah, really appreciate that for sure, and I think you bring up a great point in terms of the continuity and excuse me, not very little or very little turnover, and we enjoy each other and we like being around each other, so that makes it all the better.
Yeah, and you can tell that when a group maybe doesn't vibe or doesn't get together. And here's actually a perfect segue, perhaps, is to this Pacers group, Eddie, because they found some magic. They have a magic potion going on right now, and I've never seen in my 11 years covering the Pacers a team gel so quickly and so well, despite significant changeover to the roster. What have you made to what they've been able to get accomplished in the first couple of months?
Yeah, I think that's one of the best parts about it. Obviously the results have been better than expected from a lot of people, but ultimately seeing these guys enjoy each other's company, root for each other, hold each other accountable, encourage each other. You look at that bench, oftentimes, regardless to, and when I say look at the bench, I'm not necessarily talking about the second unit. We may get into that, but regardless to who's on the floor, the group of guys that are seated, they're there supporting, they're engaged, they're ready to go back in and make a contribution, and being able to be around with all. You see it's genuine. They really do enjoy each other's company. And ultimately, it's turning into great results on the floor.
One thing I was talking with James Johnson about a couple days ago, and congrats to him having his contract fully guaranteed, is he singled out, too, the fact that now they're again able to have team dinners again. And a lot of the guys are all taking part of that. And I know previous teams, you had guys at different age groups, meaning some were married, some had kids, guys went home after games. That's been less so the case. And can you kind of speak to what the impact of those things away from the court, away from the locker room, at dinner, on the team bus, how those can help aid in trying to, you know, build that chemistry and camaraderie with one another?
Yeah, I think it's huge. When you have in any team atmosphere, almost regardless of industry, if you can gel together, actually genuinely care about each other's personal lives to some degree, care about each other as individuals and not so much only about what happens on the basketball court, it just makes it all the better. And this team, to your point, has definitely been able to do that away from the court. They want to see each other succeed. And, but having said that, you've seen at times, whether it's in a timeout or on the floor, if there's some miscommunication or one teammate feels like the other teammate isn't necessarily doing their job or whatever the case may be, they're also holding each other accountable. So it's not they're running around, as a bunch of yes men to each other. They're also holding each other accountable, which I also think is important.
That's huge. And that's a good point, because that was something, at least from the outside, certainly looked like they were lacking some of that individual accountability, to the point where the front office after games had to go in the locker room, to the point where, maybe guys would just leave early or things like that. I think we're seeing that individual accountability and team accountability before the coaches even have to step in. So very good point, I think, by you there. The other thing, the single biggest factor, I believe, in all this certainly is what Tyrese Haliburton has meant to the franchise, has meant to the team, has meant to the city. I think he's gone and it had more than anyone could have expected in terms of his individualized impact, how he's a Midwestern guy and also just his pure raw talent playing like an all-star right now. I just think the way he passes the ball and the way he gets his teammates involved and open may be one of his best attributes. How about you?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And oftentimes when you see guys with high assist numbers, oftentimes, or in some cases, not I shouldn't say often, in some cases, that individual with high assist numbers, he's really just come convicted in his approach that, hey, each and every time I'm going to be the guy to make the delivery mm-hmm. or the decision maker, or be the primary decision maker. Where we've seen him, even though he has these high assist numbers and he's getting guys involved, he does not hesitate one single bit to advance the basketball up the floor and let someone else make the decision, whether they're going to score or they're making the extra pass. There's been some talk about, being able to track the pass that makes the pass. But he makes a lot of those ones, again, not always just in pick and rolls. He's obviously great there. He's great whether when he is open in open floor, he can go score or he can find people. But, and here of late, he knows when to turn the scoring switch on as well. So he's got a great blend of playmaking ability. And then also just being able to flat out score when it's time.
He has usage rate almost 24%. So obviously he has the ball in his hands a lot, but he loves getting people involved. The other thing I enjoy just from a pure aesthetic standpoint is when he gets juiced up when the pass is flowing. And what I mean by that is a lot of times, you see the no-look pass, but then watch him afterwards. Is he'll kind of hop, skip. I don't know. I think that's become one of his things that's been a joy to watch, I think.
Yeah, the spirit that he plays with is contagious, and it has a gravitational pull, as you referenced, from fans, onlookers, people just being able to watch his game. He plays with the game with such a joy, and when things, like to your point, when things get going well and that kind of thing, he just really it just fuels his fire to some degree. So it's just a joy to watch when you see someone who loves the game and has a sheer commitment to positive outcomes, even through some of the ups and downs within the progress.
And it's funny, I was thinking last night as a reminder popped up on my phone. It was that last year, a year ago, that's when we had the Miles Turner "That Ain't P" tweet, which clearly things weren't going well, and You know, it was right about that time when the front office clearly decided to shift its plan and then ultimately led to three trades, and that brought back Tyrese. Well, he hadn't even been here for a year, although it feels like how quickly he's become part of this organization that he has been here for 3-4 years, et cetera. So Tyrese has been a breath of fresh air, I think, to the front office, to this fan base. And now we've seen, to that point, the crowds have come back, Eddie. A couple weeks ago, we had the first sellout crowd. It took them 18 games. But ever since then, it's kind of been 80%, 90% full. The team is not only playing with a joy, but they've brought those fans back, which makes it almost feel like a playoff-like atmosphere. And by the way, a lot of these guys on this roster have not experienced a playoff game even just yet.
Yeah, there's no question about it. There's definitely been a handful of games here at the Philadelphia that had a playoff vibe to them. Mm-hmm. And you're right, just maybe – just before the holidays, and definitely dramatically risen. And you can attribute that to guys like Tyrese Haliburton. Buddy Hield plays with a great spirit and passion and competitive spirit. I feel like Miles Turner has always, regardless of what's going on with rumors, this, that, and other, I feel like when he's out on the floor, he's always played with a great spirit and competition level. So when you have guys like that and you throw in, newcomers like Nesmith, is as competitive as they come, as tough as they come. And I think right now they have a really good collection of guys on the team playing different roles. And at any given moment, either one of them can get a hot hand and take over a game.
You mentioned roles, and the buy-in is there, and that's something Rick's talked a lot with us in the media about, is how and even Miles, to his point, mentioned what's the difference between last year and this year. It's trust. It's an ego-free locker room. Take us back to when you were playing. Like, how difficult is that to experience? How rare is that for you to have a locker room that truly is part of a collective? And even if I'm not playing, I love that you are and that we are winning, because I think that's kind of rare.
Yeah, and it's a very fine line, right? Because you want competitors in the locker room. You want guys to want to be on the floor and be able to make contributions and help. The reality of it is that that's not going to happen when you have 13, 14, 15-man roster. During the season, it could be 9 to 10 guys playing regular minutes, and then once you get in the playoffs, that's probably going to go to 8 to 9 in terms of what that rotation looks like. So, you have to find the balance of having big time competitors, but also guys who are supportive and understand that, hey, not everybody's going to get a legitimate chance to play extended minutes. But you also, if you're not one of those guys, it's incumbent upon you to be a great supporter, a great teammate. Meanwhile, keeping yourself ready, because at any given moment, one of those guys could go down and you have to be ready to go out there and play and perform at a high level. So it's incredibly challenging for those guys, but they've definitely found the sweet spot. And to your point, it is, to have this type of continuity this early is rare. Now the challenge becomes, and Rick spoke to this in one of the pressers, is it's an ongoing process. You don't just think, you don't take this for granted and think it's always going to be like this, right? Because ultimately, as guys continue to gain confidence in certain things that have certain amount of level of success, you know, what does that success do to an individual's mindset? So you always want to keep that in the back of your mind as you're trying to manage a team.
And to the team collective there, I thought it was interesting how Rick was saying, you know, I was asking about the midseason, you know, did you realize you're at 41 games? He's like, that's great, but we can't look back. You can't do anything about that. You can build off it, but now we got to look forward, because it's going to be a very difficult for next 41 games here. So I thought that was a thoughtful account for having respect for what they accomplished, but not leaning on it, not getting yourself overhyped team-wise or individual-wise as well. Let's do look back a little bit, though, at those 41 games in terms of individual play. I think easily the biggest surprise has been Andrew Nembhard, a second-round pick who's not only starting but has won them games and taking on the biggest defensive matchup every game. So let's throw him out. Let's even throw Mathurin out, rookies. Outside of that, who's maybe been your biggest surprise in the level at which he's been able to contribute this season?
Yeah, I'm always hesitant to use the word surprise, just because I believe, just having been in that seat, I know what guys are capable of when they do get an opportunity.
Okay.
So it's just kind of you just kind of wait and see. But you know, in that same breath, I would throw Aaron Nesmith out there as the guy who was really had the most dramatic impact coming from almost, you know, nowhere into some degree. Obviously, he was a draft pick with the Boston Celtics and had some potential there. But playing behind guys like Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, it's going to be tough to crack that lineup with any significant amount of minutes. And he did have some opportunity there, but he's got ample opportunity here. Or I shouldn't say he's earned ample opportunity here, earned himself a spot in the starting lineup, and he solidified that with his play first and foremost on the defensive end, and his offense has just taken off as well. You know, opportune scoring opportunity. He shot the three ball well. He's one of the best free throw shooters on the team. And right there with Nembhard, he's arguably the best perimeter defender, not only on wings. They also have him, you know, he's the starting four man right now. So I think his presence has been invaluable and been a tremendous spark for this team up to this point in the season.
I would completely agree. That's who I had as well. And maybe that is a better, fair description. It's not surprise, but more of a breakout, because for Aaron, we knew he was capable of something more. We just don't know because we hadn't seen it yet, because there was limited opportunity with Boston where, you know, he's playing 10 minutes a game and, you know, maybe he would or maybe he wouldn't. Now he knows he's not only playing a lot, but starting. He's become one of their best free throw shooters, 36% from 3-point land. But he talked with us in the summer at Summer League about trying to be that two-way defender. And I think thus far, while there's still plenty of room to grow, he's lived up to those expectations. And this is a guy that was a lottery pick. This is only year three. He's barely like 22 years old, so there's a lot of room for him to grow into this role. And I thought it was notable too, Eddie, he was talking the other day after a game, I think it was, and saying, you know what, this is the most fun I've had playing basketball in quite a while. And keep in mind, he was in a finals team last year. So he's getting that ample opportunity, and that also then speaks to the chemistry of this group.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. I just it's truly a joy to me to see guys kind of sit back, go through the frustrations of not playing and understanding that, or really have a self-belief that you should be out there on the floor. And ultimately, that's, you know, there's timing associated with this, and it's not always the timing that we would like. Mm-hmm. But he kind of, you know, he obviously had to wait his turn to some degree. It was the trade happened and opportunity unfolded here for him, and he's completely embraced it. And I got to give, you know, Rick Carlisle and that coaching staff a lot of credit as well for, you know, putting this entire team, including Aaron Nesmith, in positions to be successful. They're all, you know, had the opportunity to play free, play with complete latitude to go out there and play their game and without restrictions. But they've all really just kind of gelled and embraced their respective roles and right now really just fit together perfectly.
And playing free, to your last point, is something that stands out to me too, and that I think this is an area Rick Carlisle deserves credit for evolving. And I'm not just talking this year or over the last couple of years, but through his career. You know, Chauncey Billups, now the Portland coach, was talking how he was kind of rigid in his ways, right? Early 2000s and calling a lot of plays. Well, that's not the case as much anymore. It's obviously the way the NBA game has evolved, less play calling, more free flowing. He's empowered Tyrese and also the other guards, I think, to run the offense and really truly just run the team. And so I think that's another thing that's gone well, is this coaching staff has had a lot of fun, but they've also empowered these guys to do their best.
Yeah, I can't speak to that enough, because I, much like Chauncey Billups, I played you know, for Rick Carlisle in 2004, 2006 is when I was with the Pacers. Mm-hmm. And albeit we a successful approach and clearly won games, it was a very different approach. And as the game has evolved, he's definitely evolved himself as a coach. So I give him so much credit being able to evolve and coach, you know, younger players, the modern day game, and adapt to it, but still have his game management in style and play with regards to timeouts. When are we taking timeouts? Now there's challenges. When are we challenging? I know Mike Weiner is really kind of at the head of that ship and has done a great job there as well. But he deserves a ton of credit for evolving. And as long as they continue down this path, he's got to be in the coach of the year conversation as well, when you look at what the expectations were coming in.
Completely agree. And I laugh because when the first thing you talked about is still having a few of his old styles. The timeout was the first thing I think about, right?
Yeah.
Is if he just preached something in the huddle and you give up two baskets at the rim, boop, timeout, 45 seconds in, and he doesn't care. And that's true, Rick. So I do appreciate that for certain. Second unit, as we kind of wrap up here with just a few more items with you, seems like that group has kind of not only evolved but gelled well together with TJ McConnell kind of leading it, but then Ben Mathurin being able to be the guy with that unit. I know a lot of fans would like to see Ben with that starting group. I don't really care too much who starts. It's about who finishes. And with that second unit, Mathurin can be the number one guy rather than maybe being the fourth option to start out games. What have you thought about how that has shaken out in the first 41?
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. I think that, the numbers show, and we watched the games, you know, just about every night that bench unit has had an advantage against the opposing bench. They've done a great job of either pushing the lead forward, or they've been able to crawl back into a game and take a lead. And they've just been able to do a lot of positive things each and every night out. You reference CJ McConnell. He's done a really good job of going in there, pesky on defense. Offensively, he's done a great job of pushing the pace, finding guys, getting them in their spots where they can score, and taking his opportunities to finish when teams are allowing him to get to the rim and get to his mid-range. As far as Benedict Mathurin goes, definitely he can be featured once they do get into a half-court set and they're looking to run something and get someone going. He's been that guy in that second unit. His ability to get to the free throw line as a rookie, I don't know if I've seen it before.
So impressive, yeah.
It's so good. It's been day one. He's been able to do that. He's had multiple games where he's attempted 10 more. He shoots it efficiently. Rim knows, has a great knack for drawing contact. So I've been really impressed with his poise and maturity. Right along with the other rookies in Nembhard. Those two guys look like seasoned veterans with the way they've been playing. And also, once again, you credit to their coaching staff. They've trusted those guys in late game situations. There's been a variety of times where one, if not both of them, are on the floor when it's closing time. So it's been great to see. But overall, that bench unit has been awesome. Got to give O'Shea Brissett a lot of credit as well.
Yeah.
He's a guy who's he'll sit for 2-3 games with a DNP, and next thing you know, he's back in the lineup and in the game with 15-7 and 5 or 6 plays that don't get in a stat sheet. So, those guys have kept themselves ready. And I think sooner or later you'll see a breakout game from Duarte as well.
And that was leading into my next question, because everything has not been perfect, and that's fine. Duarte missed 21 games with that bad ankle sprain. First of all, it's good to see him back and not having to have surgery or anything like that. But, Eddie, he's a guy that's right now trying to just kind of find his way and not get in the way. 2 for his last 27. And this maybe is the challenge when a team has it rolling. How do you reinsert a guy? So if you're his teammate, what are you telling Chris right now as he's trying to break out of whatever slump he's in?
Yeah, I mean, it's really just trying to pump him up at all times, and to take shots, be aggressive. Also, when you're in some of these slumps, lock in a little bit more on the defensive end of the floor, see if you can create some havoc there, deflections, steals, some runouts. Something to get yourself going there. I don't think you can let the offensive end of the floor affect what happens defensively. When the shot's not going in, hey, where else can I be valuable? Where else can I create an impact? Especially as of right now, he's probably playing, 15, 16 minutes a game, something like that, since he's been back.
Yep.
But knowing that he's capable, we saw it as a rookie. We saw it prior to injury. Matter of fact, I think he had 30 the night before he got hurt. Just this year, so he's more than capable of being able to contribute on this team. But the team does have a great rhythm. That second unit, like you said, they're playing through Mathurin. McConnell's kind of getting things going, so it's a challenge to find your way. So he's got to stay confident, and every once in a while, that bench unit has got to throw him a bone and maybe call a couple sets to come to him, and instead of like, hey, we wait to see if he gets it in the flow.
Yeah, it's maybe need to force it a little bit to him. I would agree. And then I think if he has two good games, then there you go. And then you got that guy contributing consistently rather than having these 0 point games, which is weird to see because he was such a big contributor last year in his rookie season. Last thing, we've seen this team solve for the most part, not completely, but the late game situations. 9-9 through the first 31 games in the clutch. Over the last 10, they've been better than anyone in the league, winning 7 of the 8 games that qualify. They have not solved the slow start to games, and I don't have any answers to this. Clearly, they don't as well. Sometimes the shots just don't fall. I'm not sure what you do. Do you have any answers here, Eddie?
Yeah. I think there's been some marginal improvement here probably in the last month or so. I thought early in the season it was like every time they were down 10 in the first quarter. And to their credit, show that resiliency to bounce back, and the next thing you know, they're back in the game again and oftentimes winning the game. But in the last month or so, I think they've been a little bit better with their starts, but still somewhat problematic because ultimately it's not sustainable, right? You're not going to get down 7, 8, 9, 10 points every first quarter and then be able to battle back, especially as we start getting towards the waning moments of this season as teams are vying for playoff positioning and that kind of thing. It's going to get a little bit more tougher to get back into those games. I think it's a combination of things, being locked in on the defensive end, because in those quarters that you're referencing, you know, oftentimes the opponent is getting 30-plus, and that's just far too many points to give to an NBA team, because now their confidence is rolling, and it's almost, you know, it's an incredible challenge to get back in it and let alone win it. So I think, just being locked in defensively and then execution offensively, you know, in those first quarters, they've had high turnovers, just being careless with the basketball. That's never going to help you, especially live ball turnovers. You're giving teams run outs and those kind of things. So I think locking in on the details, and it's more of a mental thing versus anything else.
Well, Eddie, I appreciate your time and enjoy seeing you at home games and then listening some on the road when you're joined Mark. And I appreciate the time here, and I think fans do as well, getting your player insight and analysis through the first 41. Thanks for the time.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. Anytime. Thank you.
My thanks to Eddie Gill for joining the podcast for the first time this season. I always enjoy his insights, and obviously he provides that unique aspect of being a player, not only in an NBA locker room, but this Pacers locker room. He knows what a lot of these players have gone through. He went through it some himself. He played for Rick Carlisle, and I get to see him every single home game as he serves as a studio host for Indiana Pacers games on Bally Sports, and then joins Mark Boyle on the radio call on the Pacers radio network. Now that this podcast episode is up, I direct you to fieldhousefiles.com for even more Pacers coverage. I talked this week with an NBA scout for his analysis on the team at the midseason check-in point. Touched on why the Pacers game Wednesday night at the Knicks was no ordinary January game, which is sometimes maybe the dog days of the NBA. I did write a story about Chris Denari being the Indiana Sportscaster of the Year. Injury updates to Aaron Nesmith, TJ McConnell. How about even Daniel Tyson, Kendall Brown, Benedict Mather, and all that, and a lot more, including a conversation with Isaiah Jackson, who came back after playing a couple games with the Mad Ants and then one with the Pacers. 3 games, 3 nights, and 3 different cities. But a ton of Pacers coverage at fieldhousefiles.com, and I invite you to join me there, join the community, and become a paid subscriber. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Fieldhouse Files, and I'll talk to you again soon.